Hi, I'm the Dark Tangent, and you're about to listen to some speeches from DEFCON 2, held at the Sahara Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, 1994, July 22nd to the 24th. This speech and all speeches are copywritten, the Dark Tangent and DEFCON Communications, all rights reserved, except permission is granted for educational nonprofit use. Now, the Sahara, like most other hotels DEFCON's been at, has since been blown up to make way for a bigger and better hotel. So with that in mind, sit back, relax, get ready for some good speeches.
Is that an applause for Jeff getting off or me coming on? I want to be real quick. If you guys, any ridicule right away? I'm opening up the door. Nothing at all? All right, I'm going to go real quick. It was kind of a last minute thing. What I really want to do tonight is just give you a little bit of an idea of who we are, what we've been doing, and what we are doing. Is everybody here familiar with who we are?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll skip that. We'll make it even shorter. 10 minutes. All right. Really, piracy is something that affects all of our members. We have about 1,100 member companies, and it's something we've been doing for the last 5 or 6 years, something we will be doing. Certainly something in terms of the size of the problem, it's hard to quantify. Our members always want us to do that as we've been working with the FBI as time goes on. Figures have shown, you know, maybe $3 billion. Sometimes I've seen it higher, sometimes I've seen it lower. It's really hard to tell. I mean, just because there's copyrighted software on a bulletin board doesn't mean it will be downloaded and used. But obviously that's the way that we have to look at those things. In terms of bulletin boards that we've been a part of in terms of investigating or heard information on, you're all probably familiar with David Lamonti at MIT, where the AUSA found that in the 2-week time frame that his system was up and running, roughly $1 million of software was actually downloaded. So obviously a pretty significant number. You can do a great audience. You may remember a couple years back, Rusty Needies, still up and running now. There we did a study in about a 6-week time period, and if we knew then what we knew now, the number would have been considerably higher, but in about a 6-week period, about $750,000 worth of software. So not as good as Mr. Lamakia. Really what I want to just go into real quickly is the efforts that we've undertaken on bulletin boards have been relatively minor. All of our cases have been handled civilly. We can't bring criminal actions because we're not the federal government, we're not a part of the federal government. Because we've always targeted one specific board at a time, all that we've ever done at most is create a ripple in the situation. You know, part of our problem is that we didn't know how boards worked, so we would really target one board and said, hey, if we go after this board like Davy Jones Locker up in Boston, Massachusetts, that'll really reduce the level of piracy. And well, we were laughed at, and we're certainly cognizant of that fact. It's a situation where we learned a lot from that, Rusty Needies and everything else, and are changing what we are doing. Let me just go real quick here. When we were actually investigating Rusty Needies' bulletin board and Davy Jones' locker, two things happened during those investigations. Outside of knowing the time and the work that it would take us to work on, we realized that we couldn't target one board at a time, move on to the next board, do a lawsuit on that board, and go after the next one. While we were actually investigating Rusty Needies, we found that the FBI was doing the same thing, kind of sloppy work on both the FBI and certainly a little bit on our part, that we both stumbled on top of each other. Because of Rusty Needies, we found that they could use our assistance, and we were hoping that they would be able to use our assistance. And we had a series of meetings together and talked about what we can do. Our concerns were that there were just too many bulletin boards for us to investigate. Right now we're tracking about 1,600 pirate bulletin boards, not so much of a regular basis, but certainly where we've at least logged onto them and have analyzed and found that they are offering copyrighted software. And that's from estimates showing about 5,000 pirate bulletin boards that are available. We also found that most pirate bulletin boards are interconnected, where if you're on one bulletin board, you may actually be getting software from another one, or where it's actually run or software supplied from another board. So we learned that we can't just target one bulletin board. Finally, we learned that just because, you know, with the expansion of the net, in terms of piracy there, who do you go after? You know, where do you even start? So we really had a lot of questions that we couldn't answer that we were hoping the FBI did. In terms of the FBI's wants from us, they were saying, what do we need? You know, why were we looking to the FBI? Namely, what they were looking for us is simple assistance in identifying software products. Very often they found that the copyright notices were stripped away, that the publisher names were stripped away, and they wanted us to be able to verify for them who the actual publisher was to basically find out exactly what the program should be looking like. And then finally, they also wanted contacts within our members, and that's something we could certainly provide them. You know, who to talk to within the legal department of Microsoft, or WordPerfect or Novell, for assistance there. And that's something that we were able to provide. Since that time, we have been actively jointly investigating a number of bulletin boards. We routinely provide the FBI with a list of pirate bulletin boards that we get information on. Simply turn that information over to them, and they are actively investigating that, and we pass information back and forth that way. And in terms of where we've been going with that, we expect some sort of significant action to take place probably within the next year or so. I'd like it to be sooner than later, but it's something where we want to make sure that our I's are dotted and T's crossed. Real quickly, I'm not sure, is anybody here aware of the Playboy case, Playboy and Farina, down in Florida? That's something that was a relatively common case. It's something we were not involved in. Everybody was aware of that, if I should comment on it? Real quickly, that was a case where there was a bulletin board down in Florida, I'm not sure where, operated by George Farina. Name of the board was Tex Warehouse BBS, that among other things had about 170 copyrighted images of both Playboy and Playgirl images, and they were available for downloading. And in terms of getting onto the board, it was either free access if you purchased regular products from them, or there was a $25 yearly fee. And that was something where the FBI was looking into that, as was Playboy, and the comments that the Freeman made during the court trial were relatively typical for a CISOP. That he's saying that he didn't personally make the copies, and the court said that wasn't a case in point. Essentially, it didn't matter if he didn't make the copies were there. Secondly, he said he didn't intend to infringe on the copyrights, but by having them there, the court ruled that he was intending on doing it, especially because it was shown or believed that he actually stripped away the copyright notices and replaced those notices with downloaded from Tech Warehouse BBS, George Farina, CISOP, with the phone number of the bulletin board system. So in every case in those 170 images, that same information was in those files. And then finally, he argued fair use, which I think we're all much past that. That was a relatively easy case, very similar to what we generally get into when we bring actions, and I hope it doesn't get much more difficult from there. Finally, just to wrap it up real quick, where are we going from here? We're really wanting to step up our enforcement. We know that the FBI is looking into a number of different things. We are ready to proceed on a number of cases with or without their assistance, and they are certainly aware of that because our members are beating on us to do so. We have a full-time investigator, person who logs on the bulletin boards on a regular basis, 8 hours a day, 10 hours a day, basically downloading stuff. His name? Could be somebody here. No. It's not Gail Thacker either. I guess she's too cool. That's right. And we certainly hire consultants, you know, where appropriate. What we're also trying to do, we're working with a guy, Fred Cantor. I don't know if anybody's aware of him. We're trying to develop a database creating signatures so that SysOps could use this program that he's actually developing. It's called FWKCS. I don't know if it stands for something. And what it will do is actually scan your system for known files. Essentially, what we're doing is creating signatures of specific file names. And if it finds that signature, it will either prevent your bulletin board from accepting those files, or it'll let you know that those files are actually there to remove them. It's something there that's probably a year or so away. But I did want to touch on, just real quickly, when Mark Ludwig was up here, I actually talked to him for a couple minutes after he spoke. I agree with him in a lot of cases. You know, he said that, you know, we can never be aware of if somebody gives another copy of software to somebody else. And you know, really, it's still wrong. The copyright law is there to protect that. it's a situation, but it's something that we're not really concerning ourselves with. We're really concerned with those bulletin boards that are actively allowing the downloading of software from their boards. That's something we're really looking into, as we call it, the bigger fish is what we're trying to go after. And we will certainly continue to do so. Got a question? It's done. It's certainly. I mean, we've not had any significant problems in getting on. Most people who, you know, we have an 800 line where people call in, they'll give us their passwords. So we're actually logging in as somebody else in a lot of cases. You know, we're not going to be stupid enough to log in under SPA or, you know, Peter Brook or anything. We're a little bit more sophisticated than that. Here we go. Hey, first to go? Go ahead. Probably none. You know, if we split up, you'll find out that we're probably investigating you, but essentially what we're planning on doing is a series of actions against bulletin boards, and at that time, once that is conducted, those other bulletin boards will have to figure out what we want to do with those. You know, if we post a simple message to them saying that we are aware that you have unauthorized software, it's kind of an opportunity for you to get rid of it. You know, obviously we'd encourage you to do so. If you don't do it, then certainly upon further investigation that we would undertake or anybody else, we'll take whatever action we need to follow up on. Mm-hmm. Not at all.
No.
Not at all. That's something that a lot of people make themselves feel better putting it in there. There's nothing that says you have to. There's no entrapment issues or anything else in there. Copyrighted text is something we have not really gotten into yet. We're really focusing on software at this point. We may be moving into that, but it's not going to be any time, you know, certainly not this year or anything else like that. We're really focused on the software part of it. Yeah? Either one. We're following 1600. That's going to continue to grow.
Are you seeking to turn the information over to the FBI so they can profit you criminally, or are you trying to change
Our intention is to go criminally. With the felonization bill that passed 2 years ago, making software piracy a felony, certainly the penalties there are far higher than they are on the civil side. Bringing it to a felony offense also got the FBI involved in wanting to pursue those cases. They really didn't want to go after civil matters, but criminally they will go after that. We haven't actually brought anything yet. You know, we've talked about, you know, what we want to go after, this, that, everything else. We actually haven't come to any sort of formal conclusion as to what it'll be. Certainly, at a minimum, it'll be a requirement that they don't offer copyrighted software in the future for downloading. Obviously, that would be a minimum and I think well expected. Could we insist that they not run a bulletin board or be a part of it? You know, really that would be pretty difficult because there's a lot of other ways you'd be able to assist in actually doing that. So we haven't really come to those conclusions yet. Yeah. No. Yeah. You're forgetting something though. No, we're not the government, but if the publisher gives you the authorization to do so, you can do that. We have specific authority from a number of our members. I'm not going to tell you who, because you'll know those products that we're downloading. But we have specific authority to either upload or download older versions of programs, current versions, beta versions of programs, up and down the bulletin boards. So I mean, we're not infringing on anything. I mean, we don't go to the extent of going outside of that list. We keep to a very defined list. Yeah. What you download it for? I mean, you can go to regular retail stores, you know, get them, buy it and return it. In a lot of cases, you can. Or they have demo copies. We work with resellers every day. We know that they certainly do. We know they certainly do. But it. The only thing our members have to sell is their intellectual property. Unfortunately, it comes in a form such as it does. I mean, you can't go out and copy your car in a day like you can with software, you know, in a couple of minutes. You know, is it wrong? I mean, is it wrong for you to download something, try it out and say you don't, you know, you're not going to use it? Yes, I mean, legally it is, you know, wrong for you to do that. If you destroy it, I mean, certainly that's something, if you destroy it, then, all right, it's a little bit better because you have destroyed it. But the problem we run into is a lot of people will download it for a trial, then they're like, well, this is a great piece of software, I like it, I'll keep it. And then say, because they set it up in a certain way, then they were like, why would I go out and spend the money for it? That's a significant problem that we're trying to deal with. So, I mean, people pass software, you know, among friends all the time. Personally, and this isn't an official FCA policy, I don't have a problem with that. But it's where that person says, well, I've got it now, I've set it up, I'm going to keep it and you know, continue to use it. That is where I consider an infringement. And that's a subjective thing. But legally, and I have to look at it as narrow as the law is, that's an infringement. It's also an infringing, you know, of the license. Yeah?
I'd like to shift gears a little bit. The FCA has been involved also with some of the corporate problems of improper licensing or the inability for them to track it. Boeing had a terrific problem with the amount of copies and untrackability and software within an organization and refused to admit it publicly. Could you discuss how the FCA worked with Boeing and what sort of financial settlements were made with the offending software companies who were upset with them?
Well, I didn't know we had a case with Boeing. Especially in terms of being in charge of our domestic stuff. I mean, we work with companies all the time. We've gone after about 1,300 companies. Well, there's a couple things. I mean, we go after, and I didn't touch on this at all, we go after both legally, enforcing copyright law, which can come through a lawsuit, or what we call the corporate audit, which is something we do in lieu of bringing a lawsuit. Or we're going to provide them some educational materials, you know, such as policies. Well, if it's a lawsuit, then it's a lawsuit. I think that's pretty clear. Policies and procedures, we have a lot of established policies and procedures that we make available to companies free of charge. We have a self-audit kit that we distribute free of charge. It'll tell you what application software is installed. It contains documentation as to how to actually do the audit, policies and procedures both to management and to employees. Have a bunch of that stuff. We also have a software management guide, which is a little bit more advanced. That helps companies comply with the law. We're actually now offering a one-day course called a Certified Software Manager that will lead to a certification. But what it is just a one-day course where it's professionally taught by an instructor who talks about licenses, the different types that are available, the copyright law, what the penalties there are, how to write effective policies, procedures, how to do audits, what SPA looks for when it does audits. Really covers the gamut of things, and that's been going over real well. Now, if Boeing has a problem, I'd like to know about it. You know, because we work by receiving, you know, reports of piracy. We don't go out and plant companies or moles within organizations and try to find that. In most cases, it is mismanagement. And, you know, it's very rare. In fact, the only intentional case I've ever seen was a company over in South Carolina that actually had an anti-SPA policy plan in place where, true story, where they were networked. Go ahead. They lost. I had to get that in. Lost big time. Anyway, what they did was set up a batch file on all their computers so that if we came knocking on the door, which we did, would go and immediately erase all their executables and command files. You know, they're thinking that if those files weren't there, they couldn't use the software, no infringement. But obviously, it was easy enough to recreate that information. There were spreadsheets, work, you know, documents and everything else created 15 minutes before, 5 minutes before, you know, 3 years ago, everything else. So it was relatively easy to prove that, you know, that software was actually there, and that led to a case of actual willful infringement. We won. It was a confidential settlement. It was one of the things that we agreed to. You know, sorry, this sometimes happens. But it was pretty significant. I'm sorry? We'll see how good you are feeding it into our network. Can't be done. Yeah. From Rob. We had a court order allowing us to go in there. It was actually an ex parte search and seizure order where we went to a federal court judge. The former employee of the company called us, told us that was out there, showed us documentation that file was actually this. Probably. We don't pay them either. I'll be honest with you, I wouldn't do anything with that because we have to have more information. I might as well take the Las Vegas Yellow Pages back with me and do that sort of stuff. So, yeah.
There was a point made at the last step, a legal issue, that you have a policy that allows people to confidential to narrow kind of companies saying that you won't reveal their name. And if that was set up in court, that when comes time to court time, you need to show where this information
came from.
Right.
That policy, therefore, in your advertising, frankly, that sounds like fraud.
And it
sounds
like legally, that's not
the
case. You can't
promise
that confidentiality
at all.
No,
I can't promise complete confidentiality. I mean,
yeah.
No, I don't. Not at all.
Yeah.
I say that we accept anonymous reports. And they call us and say, you know, simple whatever is using illegal software, and they don't ever give me a name, then obviously it is confidential. But if they tell me, you know, who they are, what they actually know, everything else, and it does come to an eventual court fight, then obviously that could be subpoenaed, and I would have to actually supply that information. But in all cases, we are going to work to keep the names of our sources confidential. You know, and in fact, Kurt Carnow, who spoke yesterday, was actually counsel representing a company that we were going after. And that was a situation where we were holding the name of the informant confidential. And, you know, Kurt certainly wanted to know who it was. And because we actually didn't bring a lawsuit, I wasn't under any sort of legal obligation to provide him that information. Now, obviously, if it went to court and he asked for it, I would have to supply it or face you know, some sort of retribution, but, you know, back to the SPA. But we make it very clear to the informant that there's never 100%. And, you know, we initiate about 10 cases a week, you know, on the corporate side. And it's probably only a small fraction of what we would actually be able to, because a lot of cases we have to stay away from because if they want complete confidentiality, there's sometimes very little that I can do with anything. I'm sorry? Somebody in the back? The guy in the back?
Yeah, you have no legal right to actually act upon a non-tip as if it is the reality. But there's nothing that says that you can't do it. How do you feel about that personally? And the other thing is, I was wondering, why aren't you going after big software companies that are ripping off small-time programmers that are making a living? And prosecute those people that aren't paying up the people that really do deserve the money instead of software companies that are making millions and millions of dollars.
They are the FDA members. The software companies.
Yeah.
If I turned out Microsoft pirated my software, what would I have to do with you? What,
Because we're a member, we're a membership driven organization. Our dues come from our members. Our revenues come in majority cases from our members, and through our conferences and things. Now the money that we get in terms of settlements is used for future investigations and our education program. It's not used anywhere else, and it's used for don't copy that floppy, you know, which. Hey, it works, you know. Mark Ludwig was like, you know, what a catchy little phrase. You know, he said it does work, you know, gets people thinking about it. And that's what we're here for. We don't. Well, let me just go back to our members. We have a charter where we cannot get involved in intra-member disputes whatsoever. We couldn't write amicus briefs. We couldn't get involved in anything like that. It came very close about two years ago, the Borland-Symantec little fiasco there, where they were both members. Gordon Eubanks was our board president. We could not take a position on that either case. You know, we couldn't support Borland, we couldn't support Symantec, we didn't want to. So, you know, if you're saying that some of our larger members are going after some of our smaller members, that's something where our smaller member on their own has to do what they feel appropriate. Like if Microsoft said, send me your guide to legal contracts, I will do that. If our smaller member says, I want to see your guide to legal contracts, I'll do that too. That's what I can do, because that's something I'll offer to all of our members. But you know, we can't get involved in those sorts of disputes.
Yeah. Does any health system operator like Aware Sport has a little notice when you log on that says, I should not be held responsible for the file content from the system? Is that any connection to Aware Sport?
Our feeling on that is that just like the CEO or an owner of a company is responsible for what its employees do, we feel the same thing has to go to a SysOp. So if something's uploaded, it hasn't been proven. It hasn't been proven in court yet. But what we're doing, and it's been touched on in the corporate side, but not, unfortunately, in telecommunications. Our feeling of that is if something's uploaded, it should be uploaded to a specific section of the board that's not available to other people until you have time to review it. Now, there's a lot of problems with that, because you may be getting so much stuff, you don't have time to do it, but it's really no different from any company, Domino's, you know, being able to, you know, what it's supposed to have, a driver behind every other but pizza drivers and make sure they don't run red lights or run over little old ladies. You know, there have to be policies, procedures implemented to protect the company. Same thing, you know, that sort of stuff has to be implemented to protect the SysOp operator from that sort of stuff. Disagree with me, but that's the way we feel, and you know, that's something that we'll certainly probably be litigating, you know, in the years to come.
Say hypothetically, if I had some DBS with like 4.5 gigs of Aware on one, and it was all encrypted, but it was available for downloading, would the evidence that you once you grabbed like the DBS and became an exclusive, how would that evidence be admissible, or what evidence would be admissible if it was all encrypted?
I don't have any. I mean, that would be something that, assuming that it could be, unlocked. We could find all that out, obviously.
If it could be downloaded, but it couldn't be viewed on the computer that it received, would that be different?
Probably not. I mean, there would probably be ways to unlock it and see what's actually behind it, to analyze it, see what's there. I'll be honest, I'm not the most technical person in the world.
You're right. Mathematically impregnable cryptography. It's not breakable by today's standards. You have 4.5 gigs in draft.
Create a hell of a lot of frustration.
Okay.
And I don't know what would happen with it. I mean, if it's totally impregnable, you may be covered. You may be covered there. But you know, there could be a lot of other stuff that, you know, there could be. And I'm not saying that this is something that happens. There could be monitoring of communications on that board, basically showing that, you know, the operator was aware of what's going on, that he actually planned on doing this to thwart the efforts of federal law enforcement agencies, this and that. So there could be other ways that we'd be able to prove intent.
But one of the large amount of evidence you have is the actual physical.
Correct. Okay. Correct. Yeah.
Recently on the conference, a beta application for part of Microsoft Chicago.
The file was available for download, and I would
fully help support you in the
conversation with the Conference Network. I'm sure they'll appreciate that. I will tell you that part of the problem is our members themselves. Where you'll get an employee who's going to release either a pre-beta copy or, you know, a copy immediately to his friend who uploads it up to the net or something else like that. I mean, that's something that our members internally have to work on, something that we're obviously encouraging them to work on. But, you know, in a lot of cases for either alpha or beta copies, you can generally trace back to where it actually came from within the organization. And that's a situation where, you know, if we get that information, we simply turn it back over to Microsoft or Symantec or Lotus or whoever, and let them do their own internal investigation on that. We, you know, we can't really get involved in that. That's an internal, we feel it's an internal matter. Right. Right.
What if there's a local Baltimore system that had that beta in Chicago and not something like CompuServe, which you go after the operator then, or do you still go back?
It really makes no difference on if it's on CompuServe, Prodigy, or a local one with one line or anything else like that. And I'll be honest, CompuServe, Prodigy, and you know, Merrick Online are all members. We have in a couple of cases where we found that stuff was up there, we simply call our main contact. Within 24 hours, it's gone. And certainly, we could do the same thing with a local one. A lot of cases, I can't call you because I don't know who you are. I'm sorry?
How much money do you offer for marking out weird boards?
I don't know why people do it. I could say that there's just do-gooders out there who are like, you know, a friend of mine may write software and I don't want it ripped off. Why people call us, I don't know. I mean, people are like, boy, you would probably triple, you know, or increase your caseload by tenfold if you offered rewards. One of the reasons why we don't want to is because we don't want people to create bad information. Already the people we're working with generally are disgruntled or not happy with either their former employees, if it's a corporate case, or maybe screwed some way out of a bulletin board or something else like that, and basically call us to get back at them. So right away we're always a little shy about the people we're talking to, and proceed very cautiously in terms of how we're going to move forward on it. I mean, Friday afternoon if the phone rings, it could be the best case on paper, but on Monday when you talk to the person again, the whole story may change, and that's something that we have to work on and be very careful with.
You mentioned a word before, intent, having proven intent before. Does that, I didn't make a
The only thing about intent goes to damages. Intent's nice because you can actually get higher damages, but it's not something that you actually have to bring any sort of action. Now, obviously, if we saw that, you were routinely getting rid of stuff that was being uploaded to you, then that's obviously something we think you're being proactive in trying to keep a clean board.
So for their application, there is common sense flexibility from an SPA standpoint.
I have to say there is. I mean, you may not agree with me, but
no, I do.
You know, back, let me go back to this. Rusty Needies, is anybody here familiar with that one? That was the situation where we had the hardest time with that, because what happened was that we found out that he would have something new up there for a week, and then take it off of the main, you know, from a, you know, like a public section of the board, and then put it, you know, within a back door. It didn't have access to that back door, could not download it. But because they were billing themselves as the friendliest BBS in the world, if you simply asked for it, he would say, you know, what is his name, Russ Hardenberg, would get back to you and say, the program that you've asked for is in this section. Go there, download it, and then I'll remove it in 24 hours. You know, that was a relatively easy one. Now, unfortunately, the FBI has been kind of, you know, running backwards on this one. They actually haven't brought charges yet, but I hear that those are planned relatively soon, you know, and because it's been 2 years, I would hope relatively soon would be by the end of the year, but, you know, obviously they've got to go through, you know, the hoops that they need to go through. Just a couple more, and then I think, I don't know, Jeff, am I the last one, or is there more?
After this, we have a little 10-minute 30, and then we give away the hard drive, and we have to shut down by 6, so.
All right, let's go, like, two more questions. I'll be around for a bit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not ours. It's actually owned by Fred Cantor, but he was going to give us a license to actually distribute it. Now, it wouldn't delete anything. It's only going to tell you the existence of something. Although you could set it up so that if specific file names were being uploaded to your system and you had FWKCS running in the background, it would not accept either those files or groups of files that had that information contained in the data file. So just for example, if the data file contained WP.exe, which is associated with the word perfect, or MU.exe, which is, you know, Norton Utilities, and somebody was trying to upload that to you and you were running FWKCS in the background, and, you know, to your system came this WP.exe, it would not accept it. Then it still wouldn't accept it. Well, it's something that's still being developed. We haven't gone through all that. It may not just be a file name, and we would probably look for a series of things within that application, so that given this combination of events, given that what we would think would be a specific combination of events, it would not then take it. Yeah. Okay, just hold more, and then I'll hang out. Yeah, right there.
Do your agents download 8 hours a day, apply the work their real name?
Bad. One more. We're an equal opportunity investor. Well, I mean, it's a classic question. Do you go after the drug user or do you go after the drug dealer? You know, it's the same thing. You know, do you go after distribution boards? Do you go after you know, other types of boards? Those are things that you know, we look at each board individually. We don't lump anything together. Just as our corporate cases, each one is handled specifically from the next. And it doesn't matter if it's a large one, if it's a small one, if it's in Chicago, LA, Oshkosh. Volume certainly has something to do with it. I mean, I'd be lying if I said it didn't. But certainly, it's not the only factor that we're looking for.
Yeah.
Generally, financially, we don't even know the financial wealth or whatever of the sysops until action's filed against them, and then we find that out later on. But we don't. I don't believe we don't. FBI may do this. We don't actually find out if they have anything to go after other than their equipment. In most cases, if we're bringing actions, the only thing that we expect to get is their equipment. You know, in the case that we have gone after, that's about all that they've had. So I'll be around for a couple. You know, I'll be around for a while. Turn it back over to Jeff. Appreciate your time.